Welcome all to K Drama School. I'm your host, Grace Chung. Class is now in session. Still dealing with some transition stuff at the moment. I bought, as you can see, if you're watching on video, I have like a couple Zoom mics behind me. I am working on making this more live podcast recording friendly. And there's a learning curve, you know, like my SD card wasn't working this morning. I was fooling around with wires, fooling around with formatting, asking ChatGPT all these questions, and it's still in the works. So once we figure it out, I think things are going to be great because there are actually quite a few amazing Madison-based comics and artists of all different kinds that I really want to interview and get on this podcast and just share with the world because, it's just like Madison's artists community. It's a very robust one and a small one, but a rich one. And they don't have as like large of a platform, but like, for instance, I went to see the show on Saturday and it's like the small local orchestra and they were celebrating their 40th year anniversary. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are plenty of musicians, DJs, comedians, clowns, painters, photographers, like performance artists, all different kinds of people that I really want to get on this pod and have a conversation with, because essentially that's just what I'm looking for. I just want to have a rich, good conversation with somebody that's interesting, who's seen the world, who has a creative drive, and I just want to know what inspires them. So hopefully, like, not too many of them are too shy to get on the microphone, because a lot of them are shy. They're shy. They're not certain of themselves. Like, that's the one thing that's been annoying the bejesus out of me. It's like, you go to places like New York where everybody has a hubris. Everybody is just like super stuck up, very arrogant. Why? Because they're like, oh, I live in the best city in the world. Like, why would I not be the best in the world? So everybody just already has that. So you talk to them, there's already energy and it's uplifting and it's interesting or funny. LA, everybody's just delusional, right? Everybody's just like super full of themselves. They're all there to make it. 100% they're all going to make it in their minds. So they have a lot to talk about because they're all talking about like, what does it take to get to where they want to get to? Blah, 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 blah. So they just don't shut up. But then here, you know, like just the other day, I was at the zoo for Pride and there were these girls. Like, I was sitting alone at a table, like this outdoor picnic table, and I was just having a drink. And these four young girls walk over and they're like, can we sit here? I was like, sure. So they sit down and they're like quiet. And I'm like, are you guys, I said happy Pride. And they were like, oh yeah. And then I was like, are you guys participating in the trivia thing? Because there was trivia about to happen. And they were like, oh, we want to do trivia. Like, she's really good. I was like, oh, are you? And she's like, no, I'm not that good. And I was like, well, she says you're good. She's like, no, I'm not that good. I'm like, okay. And then I was like, and then they go, oh, do you think we're allowed to do trivia out here? Like, as if I'm some kind of teacher or boss. I'm neither. I was just some lady sitting at a picnic table having a drink. And these four girls came over and sat down. And they're asking me questions. Like, I work the place. I don't. And I was like, I don't know. And I'm like, you know what? I would just insist on making trivia work wherever you're sitting. And they're like, oh, no, we don't know about that. And I was like, yeah, just make it work. And they're like, well, we hope so. And I wanted to confront them. I'm like, why are you not so sure of yourself? Why are you questioning everything around you? Why not just make it work for you? You know what I mean? Like, don't be this passive, uncertain, like tiptoeing around everybody and everything kind of dumb bitch. Like, get your shit together, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, Jesus, that shit is so frustrating. And I see a lot of that with Madison-based artists, you know? It's like, number one rule of being a clown is what? You want to be the center of attention. You want to be the one with the microphone. You want to be on camera. You want to be seen. That's number one. So if you want to be an artist, you got to be the same way. You can't just be like, oh, I'm just like making art and I'm just like sitting here and I'm going to put it under my pillow. No, you fucking show that shit. Flaunt it around and be proud of it and love it. Yeah? Ugh. Anyway, so that's what I'm dealing with out here. You know what I mean? Like, I'm dealing with people who are like very passive, who want to be hiding. But at the same time, like, they don't want to be hiding. Like, they're just very conflicted. It's like they make art, they want to be seen, they don't know if it's okay to be seen. So they're just like creating all this kind of chaos and just like not getting to the fucking point. I'm like, no, you're a liar. Like, you make art. If you make art, you're doing it because you want it to be out there, you want it to be seen. Don't be like, oh, I just do it for the, you know, whatever of it. No. You're doing it because it's material, it's made, and you're gonna show it. So just be very clear about that intention. You wouldn't be making it if you don't want it to be seen. You wouldn't be making it if you yourself don't want to be looking at it, you know? You wouldn't be telling people that you make stuff and you do stuff and that you're a creative if you didn't want it to be recognized. So I really wish people I'm encountering here in the Midwest who say that they are one thing but saying another about it, like, get your alignment together. Which brings me to my next point. So this past week, I had two things happen to me. I spoke to my buddy Shira, who is in Israel, and Shira Roth, she was on this podcast, beautiful, beautiful soul. Like, she's like, to me, like, master level kind of soul healer, light worker type person. Still in Israel, still a war going on, but you know, she's doing her best to keep her wits together and she's doing fine. But Shira is a master, like a Reiki master. And she was like, you know, when you reach a certain point with Reiki, you don't have to be with the person physically within proximity. You could be anywhere in the world and do it. I was like, get out. And she's like, yep. I was like, can we do it? She's like, yeah, man. So we hang up and I drink a tall glass of water. I think I put crystals on my chest and stuff. I lit some incense, cleared out the area. And then for 30 minutes, I'm lying there. And I see like purple lilac stuff, gray color go on in my eyes. I felt some tingling sensation down the left side of my body. I felt something. And I saw a couple of faces. We wrap up and then she says to me like, oh, there's something going on with your lungs, right? So the lungs are your chest. That's your heart chakra. And I was like, okay. She's like, so I did some stuff to maybe help clear that out. I was like, okay, cool. And then, yeah, we just had like a nice conversation afterwards. And then just very, very coincidentally, right? So I think I did that on Monday. Very coincidentally, like around the weekend, I think Friday night or whatever, we were down at my boyfriend's parents' place and his parents has a local friend who had a birthday party. So I go there and, you know, I'm just like hanging out with these like older retired white people. And there was this one woman that I was like, kind of like, you know, like, I was like, oh, I like her vibe. And she introduces herself to me and she says that she is a Reiki healer. And I was like, oh my God. So I immediately turn around and I'm like, what's going on with my back? And she's like touching my back. She's like, oh, I sense a lot of tension here, a lot of tension down here. I was like, yeah. She's like, you know, if you come over, I could give you a Reiki session. I was like, get out. So I'm going to get two Reiki sessions in 1 week. I go to her place the next morning. We do this Reiki session. And she told me that all my chakras are okay, except my heart chakra. So I got two Reiki healers telling me that there's something going on with my heart chakra. There's a blockage. And I'm realizing, well, of course there is, because like I've been, you know, just feeling like frustrated and blocked. Like I haven't really been doing my podcast, haven't really been doing stand up. I'm writing pretty regularly, but you know, like I got to be creatively moving all the time. Otherwise, I'm going to get crazy, you know, because like artists have to be creating art. Otherwise, they go insane. I was also like warring and battling some people in my head again. And this is something that I didn't really do too much of in recent, I would say at least in the last like year or year and a half. Like it's been pretty quiet up there for a while. And then lately, it's all been like back up and super loud. And like, I remember that very morning before I got the Reiki session, I was like battling people in my head. And then the drive over, battling people, even the drive after, battling people. And it's like, the question is, why am I defending myself? to these people. They're not even real. They're in my fucking head. Why am I defending myself? What, I got something to prove? So what's going on with me, right? So being out of alignment isn't something that's like external. It's always internal. It's always got to do with me and my perspective of myself. And I guess I'm like feeling inadequate again. It's always back to that. That's time old thing. I feel inadequate. I feel like I'm not doing enough. I feel like I'm not meeting my own standards. So then the question is like, do I get rid of the standard or do I meet those standards? I guess the answer is get rid of those standards. I mean, that's what any like Eastern philosopher would say. They're like, get rid of models, get rid of expectations, get rid of standards, right? And then the liberals who are like, stick it to the man, they'd be like, you know, get rid of the status quo, right? People who are, you know, queer politicians or queer activists, they would be like, yeah, get rid of the status quo. Absolutely. There is no such thing as normativity, heteronormativity down. Speaking of which, happy Pride. Again, it's still Pride Month. And I went to a really fun Pride event the other day at the Henry Vilas Zoo, which is just a mile away from here. In this neighborhood. I live in the south side of Madison, just like 10-minute bike ride, really beautiful. And the whole zoo packed, like 2,000 people were there. And it was just like a huge event, fantastic event, you know. I saw some red pandas. My, are they cute? They are like the cutest things in the world. I remember seeing photos of red pandas and just like losing my mind because they're so adorable. And then I saw them in person. I saw two. And I noticed that they all rub their crotch or their anuses like on whatever they could get their anus on. If it's on the ground, they'll rub it there. If it's a piece of wood, they'll rub it there. There was like literally a tiny root sticking out of the ground. And the red panda went over to that root and like rubbed its little butthole against that. And I was just like, why are they doing that? You know, and I thought maybe it's like to market, like scent territory marking. And then this woman standing next to me was like, I just looked it up. Sometimes it's just because their butthole's itchy. I was like, you're telling me both of these red pandas have itchy buttholes and they're rubbing it nonstop all day? That sucks. What are they feeding them? Like, what are they doing? They need to address this issue because having an itchy asshole 24/7, I can't think of anything worse. I cannot think of anything worse than having an itchy asshole nonstop all day, every day. Folks, today I'm going to be covering the show Tastefully Yours, which is on Netflix. This is an ENA cable or streaming channel show, and just 10 episodes, very, very short and brief, and it's got a pretty huge star, Kang Hanu, our adored, beloved Kang Hanu is in it. I love Kang Hanu. I think he's a brilliant performer. Like, he's one of these, like, New York types. Like, a lot of energy. Burst of energy. Ready to go at any minute, you know? Just, like, he has that, like, urban, fun vibe about him. Yeah, so Kang Hanu is in it, and he is there alongside Ko Min Shi. Ko Min Shi, we all know because we saw, what is it, The Frog? Or was it Frog Town? It was like I think it was The Frog. Like the show about this hot lady who is also a serial killer. Like, she murders her stepson. And then the pension, the Airbnb owner is like suspicious that she killed her stepson. So he's like trying to like figure it out, right? Anyway, yeah, I remember seeing her in that show and being like, she's hot and she's terrifying. She's probably an amazing actress. And then we're seeing her in Tastefully Yours. Very different vibe, right? She's the protagonist. She's the orphan girl. She's like the one that is dedicated and hardworking and has a good heart and gives people second chances and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so she's playing a very different role. She's playing a chef. She's playing somebody who grew up in the monastery, like a Buddhist monastery. And what's her name? Is it Han Chung? Han Chung? She's a monk, Korean monk chef woman. Chung Kwan. There you go, Chung Kwan. So Chung Kwan is like a similar situation, except she's a real monk. She's a Sun Buddhist nun. Sun Buddhism means like Zen Buddhism. So she's a monk in South Korea, and she's known for being like one of the best chefs in the world. She cooks in that Korean monk style. So
hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes, no editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com.
No animal products, totally vegan. I believe it's dairy free. I don't know, but it's totally, well, if it's vegan, it's got to be dairy free. I know it's vegetarian for sure. Maybe she uses some dairy products, but like within Buddhism, like they don't really eat, Koreans don't really eat dairy. So anyway, vegan, vegetarian style monk who is, I think she won like a Michelin star or something with her cooking. But anyway, I think Go Min-shi's character is based off of Cheng Kwan and the fact that Cheng Kwan is this Buddhist monk who is like this renowned chef. Go Min-shi's character on this show grows up in a Buddhist monastery. She is raised by nuns and she knows how to cook, and she ends up winning what's called a diamant star in this movie. I mean, on this show, of course, I guess diamant is supposed to be like Michelin or Zagat, but I'm pretty sure Michelin because everybody wants a Michelin star. So it was interesting how like this show is kind of critiquing the whole fine dining cuisine, like rave, right? Like it does have this sort of mindful critique of like, well, fine dining is elitist. Fine dining is also not exactly like it doesn't create space for Eastern cuisines. Oftentimes you got to hybridize it with like Western or French, you know, touches, right? Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it was like interesting, this like hybridity thing. So like, I'm just thinking of all these people who write about Korean cuisine stuff, hybridity stuff, like they'll have a field day with this kind of show. That doesn't really interest me so much. I was more interested in like this actress, Go Min-shi, and her versatility and how she's kind of like this new budding star. And like, what kind of work is she doing on the screen? Like how much versatility or flexibility is there? I was more impressed by her ability to transform from like this terrifying narcissistic psychopath from Frog. And then she's in this show, which is like, she has to be the opposite, like not about herself, like more mindful of others. Cause a chef is exactly that. A chef cooks for other people, right? And it's a very short series. Like that was the other thing. I was like, wow, I didn't realize like K-dramas can be just 10 episodes now and that's okay. I mean, and I don't know why that's surprising because I've seen K-dramas that are shorter than 10 episodes. But, you know, for like a rom-com, they usually go up to at least 16 or 12 minimal. But Tastefully Yours, you know what? It held my attention all throughout. So check out Tastefully Yours, written by Jung Soo-yoon. And I guess it was directed by Park Tan-hee. Park Tan-hee sounds like a woman's name. So if this was directed by a woman, then like I'm even more on board because there are very, very few women TV show directors. And I'd like to see more. Folks, as you know, my book, K-Drama School of Pop Culture Inquiry into Why We Love Korean Television, is still available. You can get this at your local library. You could download it as an ebook, as an audiobook. You could purchase a hard copy wherever you get your books. I strongly recommend that you go to your local bookstore and order this book. If you would like to have me in your local town, you could just reach out to your bookstore or some event space or a local Asian American community center or something. And just be like, I would like to invite this artist or this author over to give a reading or have an event. Like, the booking inquiry email spot is open. You could email info@kdramaschool.com. If there is a show you want me to cover, email info@kdramaschool.com. You could go to kdramaschool.com for more information on all things related to me and K-Drama School. My guest today is Josh Glenn. He is a Madison-based comedian and show producer who produces shows like Kimchi Fried Comedy. He also is part of the Cheshire Cat Comedy Collective, which produces a lot of shows of all different kinds for Madison locals. So check it out if you don't know about it. And now let's talk to my good friend, Josh Glenn.
I wish I could offer better lighting and a better background, but
your lighting and background are perfect. You're good.
Well, windows, and then my roommate's collection of stickers.
Yeah, so that's a nice collection. I have a collection of stickers. See?
Oh.
Yeah, this one glows in the dark.
What's the appeal of that? To like sticker everything on a water bottle? What's the appeal of that?
You know, I used to wonder the same thing, and then I tried doing it. Like, I did it on my refrigerator. There was this fridge that I owned for like eight years, because in LA, you have to buy your own fridge when you move into an apartment. It's really fucked up. They don't have a lot of... Yeah. All these apartments come with like no refrigerator. It's so stupid. So you have to buy your own fridge. So I bought this refrigerator for like $300-$400, and it was like the most precious thing I owned, and I had all these stickers and I didn't know what to do with them. So I started putting stickers on my refrigerator, and I was like, okay, I kind of understand the appeal, you know, because it was like totally blank and white, and I just wanted to give it some personality. And stickers have colors, they have like words, you know? So I would just like put any stickers that I like on the fridge to look at. And then I got rid of the fridge. So now I have a water bottle and I put all the stickers I get on my water bottle.
Okay. Well, that's very lovely. And I like the idea of like designing your own, like, you know, your own aesthetic to your fundamental piece of your kitchen. But that's insane. Where in the least does it say, like, hey, provide your own food safety? Fuck it. Bring your own oven.
It's just a thing. Like, culturally, it was a shock to me as well, because, like, I had lived in many apartments throughout my lifetime, and they always came with a fridge. They always came with a stove. There were some units that had no stove. There was no fridge, no stove. You had to buy your own goddamn stove as well. So... yeah, yeah. And when you move, it's a bitch. It's going to move a fucking refrigerator. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Like, you can't move, like, just with your friends, you know? Like, suddenly, if you're in LA, because you have a refrigerator, you have to hire, like, a professional moving service. It's like, that's a thing out there. Yeah.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. Yeah, that's all right. I have a self-disassembling bed frame just because I move that often. If I had to have a fridge and oven in tow,
yeah.
I'm not moving. I'm also not paying any more rent. I'm already furnishing your apartment. What are you talking about?
I know. It's a thing. You might as well just be camping, genuinely. And there are a lot of people who do that out there because housing is so ridiculous. And refrigerator, it's like the inconvenience of it is like what I hate about it, you know? Because it's so massive.
It's
like
gigantic.
Yeah, I don't know. Luckily, I figured out a way to manage it all. Like when I was leaving LA for Madison, that was the biggest headache for me. I was like, okay, I could disassemble and throw away things, but how am I going to move this fridge out of my unit? And then I spoke to my super and he was like, wait, this is your fridge? I was like, of course it's my fridge. You didn't provide a fridge when I moved in. And he was like, oh, well, he's just leave it then. And I was like, oh, okay. Cause I thought I had to like hire some people to move it out. So yeah, you're right. Like this guy, he got a free refrigerator with my stickers on it. Very personalized fridge of mine is now at this unit and being used by the new tenant, and they're benefiting from it. Yeah. There you go.
I think in Wisconsin, I think it's like legally required to have refrigeration provided, because where else are we going to put our cheese? That'd be insane.
Cheese and milk and your venison steaks. Yeah.
Dude, honestly, I would imagine in some of the more distant like places in the sticks. Yeah, I bet that's a huge like a straw for some apartments. Like, we have a communal meat locker.
That would be.
Yeah, just you know, just toss in your own venison in there, just, you know, just separately. We know you're in.
We know. We have crudely written our acronyms that mean something personally to us on every single white package. Like, that's definitely something I'm thinking about. Like, in Wisconsin, like, space is an issue. Like, because Wisconsinites like have so many activities that they have to do for each season. Like, you got to go skiing and cross-country skiing or snowboarding in the winter. You have to go like rafting, paddleboarding, or canoeing, kayaking, fishing in the warmer months. You got to go hunting in the fall. So you got all your hunting gear, and it's just like gear. So storage unit. Yeah. Do you have gear? Do you have a lot of stuff?
No, I live very like Spartan. I moved to Madison like 2 years ago, and it was like, cool. So I'm not going to be like comfortable or let myself settle anywhere because of risk and roommates and neighborhoods and whatnot. So I've bare bones everything. Again, easy assemble bed frame. As soon as I moved one box spring, I was like, fuck that. Let alone a fridge. Jesus Christ. But yes, the gear is real. The gear is absolutely real. Fishermen, hunters, honestly, you find just one dude who's like, I like snowmobiling. Cool. I guess you're getting the standalone fucking driveway. Like I don't know. Like, God. Mm-hmm. No, Wisconsin boys and girls love their gear.
Their gear and their machinery. Yeah, having a boat, having a snowmobile, having like stuff. Yeah. It's just like a thing here. People own it and they have property and then they could like put it out there. I live in an apartment, so like my battle is always like, how are we going to move stuff around to make room? But yeah, like back home, you grew up where again?
I grew up in a town called Onalaska, Wisconsin.
Onalaska, and, that's right. Yeah.
Onalaska, which is very, very hokey, but it was super suburban. And the most remarkable thing about it is that whenever I tell people I'm from Onalaska, Wisconsin, they go, you're from Alaska? It's like, it's not, it is a, God, that is a painfully named joke.
On Alaska. Mm-hmm.
On Alaska. But they love their gear out there, but very suburban.
Did you do a lot of gear stuff?
We didn't do a lot of gear stuff. My family didn't do a lot. Well, yes and no. I didn't do a lot of gear stuff. I was very much at home. Hey, I'm going to watch Scrubs. I'm going to Xbox. I'm going to hang out with my friends and ride bikes. Yeah. And then my sister was like, I want two horses. By the way, thanks for having me on this outdoorsman podcast.
Yeah. This is sponsored by REI. And we only talk about
Bit and Bridle.
And Osprey is another huge mega corporate sponsor.
And we're currently in a bidding war between Fleet Farm, Farm and Fleet.
We're
So
those the two FFs. Yeah, they're always coming at me. I can't help but talk about this stuff right now because, like, in the room I'm in currently, this is the second bedroom, and I'm trying to use it as like my podcast studio slash office, but it's also like where all the fishing stuff is and all the hunting stuff is. It's where the backpacking gear is now at. Like, I guess I'm just nervous. Like, I have to go backpacking in like less than 2 weeks. I've never done it. Like, I've never had to dig a hole in the ground to like go to the bathroom. This is not something I ever had to do. I guess I did it once, like when I was at the beach as a child, but I was a child, you know, like as a grown adult who always feels like the convenience of a bathroom is just so like precious to me. And to be out in the woods where I have to like eat canned food and hike, and it's like, I don't know. I'm like very nervous right now. So this gear stuff is.
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes, no editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com.
It's just like on my mind at the moment. Have you gone backpacking before like that?
So you describe your version of backpacking, and I will tell you, no, I've never gone backpacking.
Yeah.
So are you actually hiking? Like, are you on a trail? Are you on a way somewhere?
Yeah.
Or
So we gotta go and hike into some space in Montana. So like there's this area in Montana called the Bear Tooths, which is like very beautiful. It's like epically gorgeous. It's like, you know, on par with like, I don't know, fucking Yellowstone, Yosemite, whatever.
sure.
And so I'm going there to see the beauty, 'cause like I do appreciate Montana's beauty, 'cause I've seen films and like Montana is really epically gorgeous. But my partner wants to go fishing. That's his only thing. So I'm basically just following him around wherever he goes casting, and I'm just like hanging around there, sitting in a chair or on the ground, and I'm gonna just have to entertain myself. So that's yeah, but that's fine. Like I don't mind doing that. It's just wearing this massive backpack and filling it up with like my life's supplies for like 5, 6 days. Like that's really what's more daunting to me. But I don't know. Like maybe I should just like read Wild or something. That book Wild, that white lady wrote it.
Into the Wild.
Is it Into the Wild? There's
Well,
Into the Wild, that's like a children's book, right? Like a YA novel? No.
no, it, Into the Wild is about that guy who essentially goes off the grid completely after like getting his master's done, and then it has like zero connection to anybody for 3 years until they find his remains, like 5, 10 years later in Alaska.
Oh, look at that. We came full circle. Have you been to Alaska?
No, because I haven't completed my master's
Oh,
yet.
wait.
No.
Sean Penn did the film version of this, right?
Yes. So I think he either
Okay.
directed or produced it.
So
But
I've
yeah.
heard of it. I've heard of it. Okay, no, there's another book called Wild. Reese Witherspoon produced and stars in the film version of Wild, which is like a nonfiction book about this white lady who does more or less the same thing. I feel like after somebody goes through something, like they get a master's degree or they get a divorce or somebody dies or like they go through something and then they have to go to the woods and hike like nobody's business.
Return for to what, roots I don't know. Or something. Yeah, I don't know. So I get the appeal of like, you know, internet will call it like touch grass, like you go like ground yourself or whatever. Camping, I've never understood. I'm with you in like backpacking and like putting myself and digging holes for myself. No, I don't get it. I don't get it because every camping experience I've had has been absolutely destroyed the first or the second night because of acts of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nature, like bugs or rain.
Oh no, like genuine like storms, like I think it's a curse in my family. The curse of my family will go. Oh, we'll go camping. And then me, apparently only one, and even when I was a kid, the only one with any memory of last year when we tried to go camping, went, didn't our tent get absolutely destroyed in like that tornado? And they'd go, yeah, but like this week in June is different this year. And it's like, that's not, I think God is trying to tell us something. And so I've told my family this and none of them agree or none of them care to remember. Lost thousands of dollars in gear from trying to return to the outdoors. Hell no. I will never go in a tent again because some force out there is telling me indoor plumbing and central air, I true gods now.
Yeah. No, it is. I like hotels, you know? I love hotels. I'll stay at a hotel anytime. I do love camping too, though. Like I've had fond experiences camping. I like being outside. I like rivers and lakes and oceans. This is something I enjoy. I like forests. I like animals. But it's just like bugs. Bugs are to me my enemy. Yes. The heat is definitely a challenge. Yeah, the heat and humidity. It's a true challenge.
What's your beef specifically with bugs?
They eat me like mosquitoes. I don't know what I don't have beef with them. They have beef with me. Like I go for a walk without any bug spray on, I'll get like 6 bites and come back.
So it's the mosquitoes, it's the smaller flies, it's the everything.
It's the mosquitoes.
Do you know, actually, I don't know if this is true, if this is still true, they've dispensed with this, but last I heard about it was people who metabolize like cholesterol through their skin better, which are typically women, will get bit way more often than people who don't metabolize cholesterol through their skin, typically men. So that's why like there's like a vast difference in experience between people and like mosquito bites. It's because your own body is like, yeah, we're releasing the cholesterol through our pores, and then the men who don't release the cholesterol through their pores die of heart attacks at age 47 because it's still in them.
I have never heard of this.
No.
It sounds bonkers. I'm not going to say that this is not true because I don't know. But I've heard many theories. There are so many theories about like why some people get bitten by mosquitoes more than others. There are like all these theories. Like I've heard theories like these are like scientific theories that I've read in some magazine. They said like one study showed that certain people whose like blood is like closer to the surface of their skins, whatever that means, like mosquitoes can smell them better, so they get bitten. Other people said that it's a certain blood type, you know?
Yeah.
Like other people just say we really don't know why. So I'm just gonna go with I don't know why. The mosquitoes know. I don't know. I just have to always wear stuff. Like I got this anti-tick and mosquito like it's a lotion. It's not even a spray. It's a lotion that you like rub up on your skin. And I went took this out for a test drive, got bitten in like six places. It sucked ass. I was like, how? I guess I have to wear it like over my clothes because I wore it on my skin and then I put on sweatpants and they just like came through it. It sucked.
I mean, a lotion? Oh God. Imagine. So my experience, because I will always testify by bug spray, by DEET. I know it's whatever, but God, if that were in a lotion. Imagine finding out how many like actual paper cuts or abrasions are on your body, because bug spray on any open anything is worse than hand sanitizer. God, it's like I understand this is the cost of not getting West Nile virus, but ugh.
It's also disinfecting you. The pain is there. It's a necessary pain. No, so okay, let's you're right. We've been talking about outdoor shit way too much. Let's shift gears a little. Let's talk about stand up. Let's talk about you coming to Madison 2 years ago. Like, so what triggered the move that you wanted to move to Madison
Oh,
specifically?
well, originally for undergrad, originally.
Oh, right. Okay.
I was 18, everybody's at college. I literally had, I think, a Facebook post years ago that I found, and I have since edited off my Facebook that just said, I guess I'm a UW Badger now. Like, that's how apathetic I was about it. And then like 2.5, 3 years into it, I really shouldn't have gone to college, but I'm not going home. So 12 years in Madison.
Oh, 12 years. I thought 2 years. Okay, 12 years, that makes
No,
more
no, 12,
sense.
12, 12. I look very young, I understand, but it's been 12 years. But as far as stand up, I tried it initially when I was 20 for about 3 months. I got my ego absolutely beaten to hell. And then I swore it off for 8 years. And then after COVID, I thought, I should try this again.
Go back into the pain.
Because the market's better now. But I did stand in April of 2021 because in Madison specifically with COVID, everything shut right the hell down. So genuinely like 15, like 12, 15 months, no one was really consistently doing anything. There were circuits, there were no courses, there were no classes, there was like no social aspect. Like if you wanted to go to a bar in Madison, Wisconsin, you would have found better enjoyment like jumping into like a wood chipper. It was not a good time in Madison socially. But in April 2021, they opened things back up, and I was like, yeah, let me do stand up again because I desperately need to see people like in a social regard, just break that right open. And it was an awesome exercise. I don't know, I understand maybe your listeners already know, but like what was your intro to stand up? Like what got you kind of getting into the steps of it?
Why? Wait, you want to interview me now?
Well, I mean, this is how I constantly ask questions. I want to know more about you. Grace Jung, where'd you get that name? That's a hell of a stage name. What'd you decide on that?
I won't go into the specific, like too many specifics. I'll just say, like I've done like performing arts stuff since I was like a kid. And then like I wanted to do stand up since I was like in high school, but I didn't do it 'cause I was like, oh no, that's terrifying. Why would I do that? So I did like writing stuff, I did film production stuff, I did all this other stuff, and then I moved to LA. And while I was in LA, I was like, I should probably just do this. Because, like, I had a friend who was doing it. She was working as an actor and she was doing stand up. And I was like, all right, like, let me just go to a mic, you know? And I was still terrified. So I would get super drunk. And then I realized, like, being drunk and being on stage, like, doesn't help my nerves at all. So I stopped that. Did it in LA, and then I moved to Berlin for a while. And then Berlin has like a really good stand-up scene. It's like very robust, very supportive at the same time. It's not like hyper competitive in a sick, demented way like LA and New York are. And then I was back in LA, but also spending some time in New York and doing stand-up all over. And then yeah, that's how I kept it going. But yeah, okay. So 2021, that's like an odd time. But I feel like a lot of people were doing stand up during COVID. Like a lot of people started to do it. They started doing like Zoom open mics and Zoom shows, and they would get like a TikTok profile and make videos. And like a lot of people actually made it, like sort of made it into the circuit in that way. So
Well,
not a bad time, not a bad idea.
I specifically, I wasn't at that point for me. We might as well have just called it like square zero, like just starting point. The thumbs when I was 20 were practically meaningless because I was 8 years prior. So, but that spring, I just had two goals for stand up, and I kind of wanted to ask you about your origin. Because I thought of it for me as two things: opening up socially, and then as the strict exercise of just overcoming this particular anxiety. So I was not in stand up to be funny. I really could not have tried. I would just genuinely had in my notebook like written out goals of like sign up 10 times, sign up 20 times, sign up 40 times.
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes, no editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com.
And then like additional goals of do four full 4 minutes 5 times, do 4 full minutes 10 times, et cetera, et cetera. Get 5 minutes. I get, but like it, I did not care about being funny at all for like 6 to 9 months. But at the same time, like that would the enter like the entrance of barrier the barrier to get into like socially was just sign up and do it. And so once I did that, then you open up the social soul of just talking to everybody, and it was supercharged because of that spring of 2021 when people were very desperate also to hang out and to do it safely, or whatever we could call it back then. But yeah, I was not
It's
funny for
true.
like 9 months.
How interesting. Why do you think stand up though? Like, okay, so you had this social thing that you want to get down. All right. But there's like other th ways to be social, right? Like you could join like some kind of club or like, I don't know. I don't know what other things there are. But like there are other ways of being social. There's like other ways of getting over anxiety. Like why stand up specifically? Like what does it do for you think?
Well, I wanted to be like a performer kid. I wanted to be like a theater kid growing up, but again, it's like when I'm 15 and thinking about life, it's like, well, I'm not getting up in front of people. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just trying to get through high school and get into college or whatever. I'm not going to put myself in front of people. That's insane. And then at 28, it's like, none of my plans worked out. But I really love listening to Big J Okerson and Patrice O'Neal and Amy Wong. And I was like, you know, I want to do that because I enjoyed stand-up comedy, watching it during like the, what was it, like the around 2010 when like Comedy Central was huge. Like we're talking huge, huge. And when I don't know how you feel about him still, but when Louis C.K. like opened up like stand up, like resurged stand up comedy into like stream and into entertainment again. And then that opened up more comedy, more comedy. I was like, I want to do that. I want to emulate that once, which was the idea when I was 20. But again, I got my ego beaten to shit and it not work out that first
Meaning
run.
you kept bombing or
Oh, yeah, I kept bombing. I kept bombing for like three. So my initial break into it was comedy on state, had the open mic even way back then. And that was the only open mic I knew about in Madison. And I had friends who were like, just sign up once, just sign up once. Okay. So I practiced or writ down this 3-minute set, practiced it probably every day, like 2 weeks straight before I even signed up. And then when I got up, I did super well. Not to humble brag, but I did super well. It was very much like, oh, this is like could work. And then the 3 months after was, oh, that was an anomaly. This is the reality. Because the other open mics were brutal. Like the other open mics where it's mostly comics and it's like just people walking in, not 100 people who are plied with drinks and who paid to get in to see the best comedy in Madison. The experience of those 3 months were vastly different to my one lightning in a bottle opening night.
How did that feel that first time, like getting that many laughs?
Oh God. It was awesome. It was awesome. Like genuinely, like again, social or like performance, live performance anxiety for me was super intense when I was like 20. Speaking in front of people was super intense. So I genuinely think it was like the close to me being out of my body. Just totally like every sensation is ripping through you, and the only thing you have is what I've been memorizing the previous 2 weeks. And so God, that was like probably 10 years ago. But I still remember like getting up on stage and just like all of like that tension, all that anxiety that's been building up, building up, building up, building up for like the last hour when you find out your name's on the list. And then just having it all flood out of you as soon as you hit the stage, and the only thing you have left is the words that you have down writ, because it was just, if anybody tried to ask me a question or like interrupt me or like heckle me on stage that first night, I probably would have just like pill bugged, just immediately fetal position. Like, that's not a part of the plan. Cool. Goodbye every night.
Yeah, I think that's like true for a lot of comics. It's like, I think comics are inherently like in some ways like addicted to attention of some kind, and attention feels like love. And so they like just chase after that high, like, oh, they're laughing. Oh, wait, I pleased them,
Oh,
or oh, like they approve of me. Wait, they
right.
like me? They love me? Like,
So So,
It's such a
like,
thing.
it's that feedback, right? Is that immediate feedback to I have gained the attention of 100 or so, like, well, let's say modestly, a room of 50, 50 to 100 people. And then to have that feedback after every like intentful punchline, every intentful story beat, that's great. Have you ever tried karaoke?
Oh yeah, of course.
Oh, do you know like that vacuous silence of nobody's giving you feedback? You are just performing alone. But that's the idea, is that you are performing alone in front of people, no feedback until the very end, and holy hell, like I thought the skill transferred from stand up because it was like, oh, it's in front of people. And then you do karaoke and it's like, oh no, I'm
No.
woefully underprepared for this sensation.
Singing is different. Singing is vulnerable. Like singing is like very, very vulnerable. And
Good.
it's a whole
Yeah.
other thing.
It's vulnerable, but good comedy should also be vulnerable. Good comedy should have like a twinge of like, oh, this
I
is too
mean,
honest. This is too honest to leave alone. Like,
it's vulnerable, but it's practiced vulnerability. Like, the comic is like they have an act, you know? They know what they're gonna say. They know where to expect the laughs. Like,
yeah.
it's practiced, you know? But like with singing is like, yeah, you're just singing. It's like very, very vulnerable. Like you're
Oh,
not. It's
yeah,
a whole different kind of thing, I feel like.
but like when I tried to do like karaoke, I was like, I'm gonna try karaoke. I did the same steps for stand-up comedy. I was pissing in the car for like 2 weeks prior. Like I had two, three songs in my head. Like
Wait.
these are my songs. I'm gonna crush these three. Every drive, every commute, I just
You're
looped
killing
those
me right
songs.
now. Whose karaoke was, where was this karaoke night?
This first one was at Gamma Ray in
Oh my God.
Madison, and
Okay, yeah.
then there was another one at like this place called the Ohio Tavern on the east
Okay.
side of Atwood, that
Is that
neighborhood.
the one that Owen Joyner's mom like runs, that Adrian runs?
I think so.
Yeah, I think Adrian runs like a karaoke night.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I think
Okay,
that's it.
so all right. Okay. This is hilarious. All right, so what songs did you sing?
God.
Yeah.
Mario's Let Me Love You.
Okay. Marius, let me love you.
I have to get this. I have to get this title right, AJ. AJ's what was his big single? One Wish. And
One Wish by
then
AJ. Wow. Okay.
Ray J. You
Ray
know, Ray
J.
J. Ray
Okay.
J. And then oh God, Neo, So Sick. It was
Neo. Wow.
Neo? I grew
Goodness.
up.
You're singing some like I mean Neo, like these guys like they're
Yes.
like great singers. I mean,
Oh, they're incredible singers, and
you're
I
aiming high.
Oh, it was the highest, man. It was the highest. I should have like stuck at like You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, like down in like elementary level. I was like, nah, I'm going for the stars. I'm having it.
That's like me saying I'm gonna sing Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston like all
Yes.
in one night. And
And
it's like,
oh dude, just absolutely go in on it. No,
Jesus.
I picked those three songs because growing up, I would be what was it? I inherited or I was like hand me down music from my sister.
Oh,
And
yeah.
my sister was really into R&B.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
really. So that's that explains the Neo, that explains the Mario, that explains the Ray J. I mean, if you let me practice and let me be a little more deluded, I would have done like Aisha, I would have done Keisha Cole, I would have, it was It would have been bad.
I
Oh
want to hear Keisha
God.
Cole. Have you ever been
Oh.
to like a Korean karaoke room?
No.
Okay. This is something, 'cause I know you're like your father is Korean, like ethnically Korean. I know you didn't grow up with any like Korean stuff so much because yeah, but I feel like this is something you would appreciate. Like in Japan and in Korea, they have rooms. It's not like an open public situation where you sing karaoke. Like hell
Yeah.
fucking no. That is psychotic actually. In Korea, you go into a room, and they have these in Chicago, LA, New York. They have them, like, I'm sure they have somewhere in Milwaukee, but it's like a Korean karaoke room
Yeah.
where you go
Yeah, it's a
in with your designated people, the people you feel safe with, like
Yes.
your homies, where
Yes.
you could be vulnerable, you could act a fool, and it'd be still fun and a good time. It's not like some drunk stranger in the corner judging you.
Oh yeah.
And you just go in for like 2, 3 hours. I sometimes when I'm in New York, I would go for like 4 hours. You
Oh
get
yeah.
bottle service, you get food delivered, just, your friends keep coming through all night, and you just sing like every song, every pop song in the book.
Oh yeah, it's a place without time. It
It
doesn't
is
have
that's
windows.
yeah,
I'm pretty
no
confident
windows.
they
Yep.
pump pure oxygen in the room just to
You
keep
got
you
the
going.
screen, you got the TV screen with like weird music videos of like animals or nature, and then you got the words, like karaoke style. This is a thing.
I've heard of these rooms. I've seen them in popular culture. I have never experienced one. Maybe I have. I can't remember
You need to make
specifically.
it a point to do this because you go for the heights, man. When it comes to song, you go for the heights. And what better place? You don't have to practice in your car. You could practice in a karaoke room. And if you want to take that shit to the public, to a public karaoke space that white people own, yeah, you could do that too. But yeah, you need to go into the room.
No, I'm gonna go to the minority owned karaoke spaces. Yeah,
Yeah.
the Korean karaoke rooms that are owned by the Hmong family in town.
That's the ones you gotta go to. There you go. That's exactly it. All right.
No.
I'm glad we got somewhere with that because, man, I was just like, wait, what? He practices before he gets on stage for karaoke. It's not even stage. It's like karaoke.
It's the same, it's not the same skill, but it's the same, like, it's same vein. Like, it's all the same, like premise. It's all the
Yeah,
same
this is
steps.
true. Okay.
And so it's just like, well, I practiced for weeks before doing my first stand-up. I
Yeah.
might as well practice for weeks before doing my first karaoke. And that first karaoke night, oh God, that was brutal. That was, I mean, again, with
Hi, I'm Darren Marlar, host of the Weird Darkness podcast. I want to talk about the most important tool in my podcast belt. Spreaker is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to record, host, and distribute your show everywhere, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify. But the real game changer for me was Spreaker's monetization. Spreaker offers dynamic ad insertion. That means you can automatically insert ads into your episodes, no editing required. And with Spreaker's programmatic ads, they'll bring the ads to you, and you get paid for every download. This turned my podcasting hobby into a full-time career. Spreaker also has a premium subscription model where your most dedicated listeners can pay for bonus content or early access, adding another revenue stream to what you're already doing. And the best part, Spreaker grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or running a full-blown podcast network, Spreaker's powerful tools scale effortlessly as your show grows. So if you're ready to podcast like a pro and get paid while doing it, check out Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com.
With the addiction, with the like the feedback, and it's like this is what like you love the people that should with karaoke. It was like, I want you all to stop paying attention to me right now. I your
Start
attention
talking amongst yourselves.
start do the
Go to the
Wordle,
bathroom.
do a
Yeah.
Scrabble, like
Order food.
get your
Just
food.
leave. Just leave right now. Walk out of here.
Oh my God. No, it's I couldn't. It was again such a vastly different experience. So I would say it's a different set But that is what I would, that's how I would relate to, like, yeah, stand-up comics are addicted to the attention. They're addicted to the feedback because when you put them in a similar place, but that feedback is just normally not condoned or not like, like expected. I was totally without. I just had no like internal like processing in that moment of just like, ah.
Yeah, that makes
No.
sense. Yeah, it's like
Like,
there's a feeling of like lostness. Like,
oh
oh,
yeah.
did I do this right? Like, do I get pats? Like, is this good? That kind of thing. It's an approval seeking thing. Again, like,
Oh.
it's what somebody had said to me. They were like, oh, you like it when people laugh at you because it's like approval. And I looked at her with so much hatred because she was right. It was like dead on. And I hated her for being so accurate. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that. Like, do I still feel similarly in my life? I don't know. I'm at a point where I'm just like, yeah, I don't really give a shit. I give less and less of a shit like what other people's approval is of me. I give more of a shit of like my own approval to myself. And
And
I
that
realized
will
that's
either,
always been the thing.
I think that will either make you a much better stand-up comic, or it'll make you an incredibly powerful karaoke performer.
So
Just not
yeah.
giving a shit. Just
One of either or both. You could be both.
oh.
Yeah. You
But
would be the most
that.
powerful. Now you have a new goal, it seems like, Josh.
Oh
You can
yeah.
write in your notebook, next goal is
Next
to
goal.
not give a shit and become an incredible stand-up comedian and a power karaoke singer
A power.
who can dominate Neo and Mario, Bruno Mars, Keisha
Bruno.
Cole, Aisha.
That isn't that the kind of the idea though? Because I understand, like, I got into stand-up comedy for like the exercise of like overcoming this anxiety, like that rush of like getting on stage and doing well, like that's like a total like system flush, like everything is just outside of my body after a decent performance, and I would chase that, and then I got better, and you get more minutes, and you get more expectation. And eventually that kind of that dwells, like you don't get that same high, like that settles, and it's like, all right, now I'm doing like full on 15 minutes and I don't care at the end of it.
Yeah,
And
full
it's
on
like
15 minutes and not caring. It's like too soon, I feel like,
that's but I didn't get that rush, like it wasn't the gamble anymore. It's not like I think that's why I'm doing the karaoke. It's because of like that head rush, that like, oh God, I'm so tense. And then at the
Yeah.
end of like 2.5 minutes of me squawking out of R&B, it's like, oh dude, I'm done. I'm
It re
accomplished. I've
it
done
reminds me
everything I
of it reminds me of people like that w they were like addicted to coffee and then they give up coffee and then they start drinking matcha and now they're addicted to matcha. It's like you just traded stand up for karaoke. And now karaoke, becoming karaoke king is now that should be your other goal. You write that down in your notebook. Karaoke
Karaoke
king.
King.
Yeah. KK for Josh Glenn.
issue of Josh Glenn. I don't know. It like karaoke again, I would say is more socially acceptable than stand up, in that somebody will just rarely will I ever need like 3 minutes from like a draw, like, oh, I can go do like stand up real quick. However, having like a couple of good songs in karaoke that you can just knock out in front of strangers, I think is very useful. Like if you can just suddenly go up on stage like without prompt and just belt out Second Chance by Shinedown and just get the room in on it. Oh, I think that's super powerful. Like, what are two songs? Do you give me two songs? If you could just have them, like, and you would perform them at a decent to even like high quality level, what are two songs that you just want to be like, I can do this? I can just knock this out right now. Like, what would your be? What would your two songs?
You're asking me this?
I'm asking you this. I want to know.
Oh my God. Again,
Come on.
you're taking on the interviewer role. No, I actually don't have that much anxiety about singing in a karaoke situation because I've done it so much since I was like, I don't know, like in middle school. Like my friends and I would go to karaoke rooms and stuff.
Oh,
So,
you were like performing way younger
yeah.
than
So,
I was.
yeah. So it's like not an it's a non-issue for me. But again, I only go with like trusted friends and individuals. Like I don't really go with strangers so much.
Okay.
Sometimes I do, and I'm just like, I don't care, whatever, it's fine. But I usually sing Mariah Carey's "Without You," and I also sing.
Excellent.
What else do I sing? God, I haven't been to one in a minute. I like that song by Monica about
Monica?
crossing the ocean. "For You I Will" by Monica.
Oh.
I also like, I mean, I like Whitney Houston, but I don't really, I'll sing like, there was this woman in LA. She was like, it was my friend Dante's wife.
Yeah.
Dante's like a comic. Dante's wife. She's Korean American. Dante's Korean American. And she and I would go to karaoke bars together. We all always knew like what we would sing. Like she would punch him in. Like she knew that I would want to sing this. I would like punch in her thing. And she would always sing Whitney Houston songs. So, and I would sing
Yes.
Mariah Carey songs. So one time she and I did the duet with Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston. Like, was it "If You Believe"? Right?
Yes.
The one about like Moses from Prince of Egypt. Yeah. So we would like
Oh.
do a duet of that, and like that would be fun. So yeah.
Oh,
We wouldn't care. It
that
wasn't
is.
about like doing well. It wasn't about like hitting the pitch, getting the right tone. That helps. But it's like with those Korean karaoke machines, they give you a score at the end. It's like you get a 75 or an 85 or a 90. Like they fucking score your ass. And like I remember hearing somebody sing like perfectly, like every pitch, every note, every beat, like it was perfect. And they got a
Yeah.
pretty low score. It was like 88 or something. And then like somebody else would sing and they would sing super loudly, like with passion. And they would get 100, you know, even though they didn't hit every single note or every beat or every word. So it's more about like how committed you are to the song and to the feeling, rather than
That
trying to perfect it.
is actually the skill that I would love to have most. My friends and I were talking about this, and we came up with the term the embodiment of the song.
Being
Do you
present.
embody the song? Are you present while performing? Are you full driving the performance? And if so, yeah, get 100%. You deserve it. You could hit none of the right notes, but if you there and you bring the audience in, oh yeah, total embodiment. That's a
Got
good skill.
total embodiment is necessary. It's necessary for any kind of performance. Like karaoke is one thing, but like stand up, absolutely. If I'm like checked out and I'm in like autopilot and I'm just like running my stuff, then
Yeah.
I'm not there and the audience isn't there either. It's like there's a subconscious thing that goes on where like the audience can feel things and detect things, and it's like if it's not there, then they're checked out
No.
too. So yeah,
No, that's
embodiment is good. That's a good term for it.
embodiment. So you notice the little checkout, like the audience kind of like hold back when they sense like a comic is just
You just
strictly ready.
feel, yeah, you feel the energy dip. You feel them, you feel the audience checking out too. Like it's so palpable in the room when somebody is just doing rote memorization, da 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 da, and they're not feeling and they're not convinced by their own story. Like this is all very, very, yeah.
Is that
But
always been the case for stand up for stand or is it because of trends chasing? Is that like why crowd work is becoming more interesting?
crowd work works because you're fully present when you're doing crowd
Yeah.
work. there's no way you're not rote memorization, like just streaming like off the. No, it's not. That's you're playing with an audience member. You're fully present. You're giving them attention. They're giving undivided attention back, and you're playing together. So that's full presence. That's, and also crowd work is so available on like social media because serious comedians don't want to put their material on social media and give it away. They want to hang on to that. So crowd work is like a safer bet to upload. I would say that's the logic for me at least. But yeah, crowd work is always fun because you get to be fully present and play with audience members, and crowds love that. So why wouldn't they?
What other like measures or techniques of embodiment outside of crowd work are there for stand up? Is it like you wouldn't like read like reading the room, I would say clearly, but would that change like where your pregnant pauses are with a joke, or would that change how like even like interact with the stage? What are the other elements of embodiment? Because I would be like trying to perform in a room, and if like I was just tossed like 10 minutes, my embodiment would be like, well, I'm just here to kind of kickstart the room and then get out. But if I knew like the room like was specifically like promoted with like either my comedy or like the lineup's comedy of mine, like I once did an all Asian lineup in Chicago, I would say my embodiment on that stage was way different than just being like, yeah, you're doing 10 minutes at Lincoln Lodge, go get them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's like an answer that would apply for every single case in a situation like that. I would just say the presence thing is just applicable no matter what. No matter what. I'm not talking only stage, I'm not talking performance only. It's like conversations with an individual. You know, like interactions of any kind, doing anything requires full presence. Like it requires full presence. That's why, like, you know, so many people do like meditations, you know, like it's to practice presence. Like, don't run away. Why are you running away from this? Like, my friend Shira called me out on that. I was like, oh, I'm gonna go for a walk, I'm gonna put on my earphones. And she's like, why are you running away? She's like, acknowledge the environment fully for what it is. Is it loud? Are there people annoying you? Fully embody that and experience it. Don't run away. Don't block things out. That's not being fully present. And I was like, she's correct, you know? So I think practicing presence in every way possible in one's daily life helps with all the times that you have to be fully present in performance spaces, you know? So yeah, that's my answer to that. But I have to ask you a bunch of questions now because we're at the tail end of this conversation. And I play this game with all my comedian guests. I take a K-drama and then I take the character and I take the situation. And it's like basically, if you were this person in this situation, like what would you do? You know, just riff on it. You don't have, again, don't try to be perfect. Don't, you know, just like be as like free and ridiculous and in the moment, off the cuff, riff as best as you can. Okay. So try practicing presence with this. Let's see how it goes. Okay. All right. So the show that I'm basing this off of is called Tastefully Yours, which is currently on Netflix. And so let's say you're a male executive. All right. You're a male executive. Your name is Pomu. You live in Seoul. And you're an executive at a top food conglomerate called Hansang, right? So you're this big shot guy. And you're the head of a restaurant called Motto, which has one star, which is a prestigious thing. It holds one star and it's famous for its fine dining experience, okay? What people don't know about you is that your job is to go around the city or around the country or around the world and find the best restaurants for their cuisines, poach the recipe, and then you and your executive chef copy that exact recipe. And then you and that small town restaurateur, you guys sign a contract where you buy that recipe off from them and essentially shut down that restaurant for business, okay? So this is your job. Your role is to go around poaching recipes and pretend like your restaurant is the one that originated it, and that you shut down these vulnerable smaller businesses, okay?
Wow, okay.
One day, you learn that one of these small restaurant owners that you took a recipe from, he attempted suicide, and it's all over the news, and it's affiliated with you and your company. What do you do?
What would I do? Well, I would probably, just one clarification. I'm the executive and the head of the restaurant. So it's like this tiered management that I've been assigned.
It's a food conglomerate. So it's a whole company that owns like food products, but also restaurants. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And I'm doing the, and I'm having this own little restaurant as like my side thing, or is this a part of
the conglomerate? So many questions.
You're the
restaurateur. You're an executive restaurateur. You go around stealing other people's recipes in exchange for money. So it's not stealing, but then you do exploit them. You shut them down, and you shut down this guy's restaurant. He was pissed. And then he attempted suicide because he was going flat broke. What do you do?
I mean, the serious answer would be become overwhelmingly guilt ridden. I would probably, I don't know, but knowing how I overthink things, I'd probably find a way to start. I'd feel so bad. I'd probably find a way to reach out to him, like through other channels, not directly through me. And then through those other channels, essentially paid actors, I would start like creating fake investors for him when it's all my money. Again, this is how I love my this situation, because I don't want this all about me, right? So I would hire people to pretend to be people interested in his life, and then probably like start channeling money to see if we could get another like business up and running for him, and then accidentally probably discover a truly frightfully a money laundering situation. Probably across international borders. But again, this is how guilt-ridden I am, that I'm willing to break international law and like fiscal fiduciary responsibility just to get this man's life in order. And then to probably, because this is a K-drama, accidentally meet his daughter when she comes to visit the restaurant that bought the recipe from him. Am I writing this well? is this drama enough?
So far, super psychotic. So yeah. Let's cut it there. Move on to the second question. All right. Now you're a young woman. Your name is Yunju, and you run a one table restaurant in a tiny little town with no advertisements. All right.
Okay.
You're a great chef, but you are going out of business. Your landlord keeps threatening to evict you. What do you do?
I would start to ratatouille. I don't know if that's the strategy. I don't know if that's even available.
Mm-hmm.
I ratatouille. What's the indigenous animals of that Korean town? Raccoons? I would raccoon-y. I would everything everywhere all at once to save my restaurant.
Okay. So you would
find a
rodent and train it. No, this rodent already knows
how
to cook better than you. Yeah.
It would
train
me.
Okay, so you would find a master rodent to help you with your cooking abilities. Okay. All right.
I would find the culinarily equivalent of Master Shredder from the Teenage Ninja Turtles to teach me how to make the perfect pizza for my one table restaurant.
All right. This is still a strategy, so I'm glad you're thinking. Okay. Next
This is
question.
still a strategy.
Let's say you're Yunju. Okay, you're the same chef woman, okay?
Okay.
This male executive named Pamu shows up on your doorstep and he wants to be a part of your restaurant. So you sign a contract with him in order to save your business. But he seems really sketchy. He has his own way of doing business. You have your way of doing business. You guys keep butting heads in the kitchen, all right? And this is your kitchen, not his. What do you do?
So that rodent I found earlier,
Yeah.
I would just make sure it has rabies. That's it. I
Oh,
don't know. That would be it.
okay.
Deep health
So,
concern, but when my livelihood and my one table restaurant is at risk, you have to keep the nervous the nerve damage ridden in the back pocket for
okay.
such a case.
Yeah. All right. So this rodent is both a chef, teacher, and a weapon for
And
you.
a weapon.
All right, great. Okay, good.
It just yeah. Hey, if you're dealing with sketchy business conglomerates trying to exploit you,
Yeah, you don't know that this is a you don't know that he is trying to exploit you just yet. You
oh,
just
it's just a
signed a
guy?
contract. You just signed a contract with this dude. Yeah, you don't really know what his deal is exactly, but he did like dig you out of a hole. So that's the contract you
Okay.
signed. Okay. All right. Now
Okay,
let's say
so
you're
he's a
Pomu.
guy.
Okay. You're the male executive now. Okay.
Okay.
You know what your deal is. All right. You've been doing this for many years. This is what got you in this high and mighty position. This is what got you all the successes you've had. You know that you're going to poach this young lady's tiny restaurant. Okay. You know you're going to steal Yunju's recipes. You know you're going to then shut her down and ruin her business. Okay. But then, uh-oh, you start to develop feelings for her. All right. Because
Oh
she's a
God.
cute young lady. Meanwhile,
Oh
your
God.
brother, who is your rival and nemesis, he's getting ahead with his own entrepreneurial success and it's driving you insane. What do you do?
This is an actual show?
You ask too many questions. You got to answer my questions, man. You got to answer my questions.
My bro, God, the brother, the rival. He's getting ahead. What do I do?
And you're falling in love with the
I
lady who you're about to shut down.
and I'm in love with the lady I'm about to shut down. Oh God. And I need to defeat my brother in executive gladiatorial function. I would probably purchase the rights to Culver's Butter Burger and then introduce it as a flood into Rhea and the overwhelming acceptance and adoration of the Butter Burger will absolutely drive my brother out of business and I would make my new love interest the head of the Korean Culver's division.
Okay, great. This is still an answer. All right, so your answer is Culver's. Steal another steal a Wisconsin franchise and bring it to South Korea. Okay, let's say now you're Yunju, okay? You're the young lady chef, all right? Your ex-boyfriend Chunmin from your past shows up. All right. You and Chunmin, you guys worked at the same elite fine dining restaurant in Japan before you left. And the reason why you left is because your ex-boyfriend made a mistake when he was cutting a puffer fish and he fed a customer an unsafe part of the fish because
Not
they
the
have this,
fugu
like,
fish. Not the
yeah.
fugu. Oh,
So
God.
instead, of letting him take the heat for it, which you should have because it was his mistake, you decided to step in and say it was my fault and you covered for him and you got fired. All right. So this ex-boyfriend returns and he asks you to come back to the old restaurant where you were fired from and he is now the head chef at. What do you do?
Oh, but I just got promoted to the Korean Culver's division. Oh no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh no.
Oh, no.
I still have this, and I still have this biohazard rodent. Oh God.
Oh, my God. Your plate is full.
I would return to the restaurant. I would return the restaurant and I would promote the rodent to the head of the Korean Culver division. And then in Japan, I would expressly make a rule that our restaurant can be everything it was before, except it's one table and we exclusively serve Fugo fish.
Okay, great. Beautiful. All right. Let's say you're Pomu again. All right, you're the guy, the executive. All right. You're in love with Yeonju, but her ex-boyfriend is back in her life. He wants to take her to Japan to work at their last restaurant together. What do you do?
What do I do? Make a move on the boyfriend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, make a move on the boyfriend and
Make
then
a move as in.
try to purchase the infamous Fugo dish recipe from the restaurant and shut that down.
Oh, okay. I like that strategy. That's pretty boss ass move. Okay. Last question. Let's say you're Yeonju, all right? You're that young lady chef. You find out the truth about Pomu, that he's a restaurateur who targets vulnerable restaurants for their secret recipes, buys them out, shuts them down. And this really hurts your feelings because you've been developing feelings for this guy and you trusted him. What do you do?
I sleep with his brother.
Oh, that's a really good comeback.
Sleep with his brother. I
Of
don't.
all the things you said this whole time, that was the best thing you said. Yes.
I'm genuinely. This is a show.
Amazing answer.
This is a show. I was afraid by how I was answering, and you told I was like, all right, let's try to make this funny. Oh my God, this is a genuine show.
Great answer, Joshua. Yeah. Thank you for being a guest.
What is this show? And I'm gonna watch it now. I'm gonna